Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
Pulled from the hottest topics coming across our news desk, I'm Elissa Branch, and this is Housing Wire Daily. Today, you'll be listening to a Real Trends crossover episode that features an interview with Engle & Völkers America's CEO and President, Anthony Hitt. In this episode, Hitt shares his expertise about the global investment in the U.S. real estate market, as well as who's buying and strategies for building a global brokerage. But before we listen, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
At Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, we know your vision of success is unique to you. That's why your goals and our culture of support go hand in hand. We give you the tools and support you need to thrive and live your best life. Come home to Atlantic Bay. Visit joinatlanticbay.com to explore what's possible. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, NMLS number 72043, is an equal opportunity employer.
This is Tracy Velt, Managing Editor for Real Trends. Today, you'll be listening to an exclusive interview with Anthony Hitt, CEO and President of Engle & Völkers Americas. Prior to joining Engle & Völkers in 2014, Anthony worked with Sotheby's International Realty in Los Angeles for 8 years and closed approximately 400 real estate sales transactions amounting to nearly $500 million. He has authored several books to share his advice for success in business and in life, including The Essentials of Personal Achievement, Taking Charge, and Positive Impressions. So welcome, Anthony. Thanks for joining Real Trending.
Tracy, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so I want to kind of talk a little bit about global real estate. I know some things have changed with the pandemic, and I know here in Florida, we're seeing a little bit of an increase in buyers coming. But first, I want to talk to you as a brokerage firm. You obviously have a focus on global real estate. So tell me a little bit about how your franchise has fared through the first half of the pandemic.
I think like everyone, we were concerned in the early days of the pandemic as what this was going to mean for us in this business, not only here in the Americas, but globally. We certainly heard the stories. Just tragic stories coming out of Italy and Spain and other parts of Europe. But at the end of the day, like many, Engle & Völkers Americas had our best year ever in 2020. And as a brand globally, we also had our best year ever. As a matter of fact, overall revenues were up 14% in 2022. Globally, here in the Americas, we had an amazing increase of almost 40%, 38.4% in business. So it was actually a very good year for us. And some of our shops in Florida, I know where you're located, our 30A Beaches shop in Florida, it increased our business 72% year over year. And we used to have numbers like that in Idaho and Montana and Colorado and Wyoming. So it actually turned out to be a really good year for real estate, because I think, as we've all learned, is real estate is essential. And a lot of people really looked at the priorities when it came to their homes in 2020 and their living space and a lot of them now their working space and how they would operate. So for the most part, it was a very, very good year globally for Engle & Völkers, certainly a good year here in the Americas. And from a real estate perspective, prices stayed pretty positive in almost all of those markets, whether that be Paris or Rome or Hamburg, where our company is globally located. But also here in the Americas, we know the prices continue to go up.
So I want to talk to you about the types of buyers. Now, you obviously have a global focus, but you also work with domestic buyers. So what are some of the things you're seeing? What countries seem to be active in investing in real estate in the United States? And where are you seeing the most movement state to state?
It's an interesting, and you're right. I think when people think of Engle & Völkers, they think of a luxury brand. They immediately think of the fact that we are a global brand, or that maybe we only work exclusively with global buyers. And why we certainly specialize in working with people who are moving, whether it be across the state or across the street or across the globe, we certainly work with all types of clientele. When we look at the global business, though, what's interesting to me in the Americas is, Now, we've always seen the impact coming from Canada. A lot of Canadians are interested in the U.S. What we have found over the last couple of years is a lot of Americans are interested in the in Canada. And so we've seen both the give and take there. When we go over to Europe and Asia, the United States has always been kind of a safe haven, and Canada as well. So the Americas have always been kind of a safe haven. And that really hasn't changed much during the pandemic. We still have the level of interest from European buyers, whether it be a second home or an investment property. We certainly still see, especially in Canada, the influx of Asian buyers, buyers from China specifically, wanting to be here. What the pandemic has caused, though, of course, is the challenges of how do you make that happen. So while we've seen a trend for less international buyers over the last year, there's a pent up demand there that I think as the restrictions are decreased, that we're going to see really an influx of those buyers. But it hasn't stopped completely. I mean, there still have been those buyers, but I would say it really hasn't changed during the pandemic. You still have that group of Europeans and Asian markets who want to be in the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah. I mean, I think the United States is still a good, safe investment for them. And when they're looking to get money out of their country, they're still investing it in the United States, whether there's a pandemic or not. So
without question, it's just, with all of the trials and tribulations we have with some of the social unrest and the government unrest and all of that, it still is a great alternative to a lot of other places on the planet. And I think that's why we continually see a lot of global buyers looking at the Americas.
Now, do you see any trends in different states? I mean, Florida, California, they've always been attracted buyers from Latin America, Canada, China, other countries. Do you see kind of a different type of investor or buyer coming into different states than usual?
I would say what we've seen in the let's call it the usual suspects or the places, whether it be the West Coast, Vancouver, Los Angeles, San Francisco, or as you mentioned, the Northeast, New York, Boston, or Florida, of course. You know, we still see I think the same level of interest when it comes to the European buyers and the Asian buyers, or as you mentioned, the buyers coming from South America and Central America. What I'm seeing different, I guess, over the last couple of years, and I think we're going to see this as the pent up demand is kind of released again, is as the globe gets smaller, as brands like Engel and Völkers do a really good job of communicating what other options there are, and people understand markets like Austin, Texas. When you look at markets like Minneapolis, again, markets that we don't first think of as international marketplaces, we're seeing a lot more interest. If you look at the number of international flights going into, let's say, Austin, Texas, or going into Minneapolis, or going into Atlanta, Georgia, you know, these are all becoming very, very popular markets for global buyers now as well. So it's not just the coastal areas that we've seen in the past. It's also the other areas that I think global buyers are starting to wake up and say, wait a minute, this is interesting. This is what I think I really was looking like when I was thinking of the American dream.
Okay, great. And what about investors, maybe not necessarily second home investors, but those coming over on maybe an EB-5 visa starting companies here? What are you seeing trends that way?
Same trend. It's where are the business opportunities? Again, a lot of that might be wrapped around tech in some fashion. And again, we've typically thought of Silicon Valley as the tech capital, or we think of the major metros. And while that's still completely true, again, you have those other markets like Austin, again, Seattle. Again, these are all markets now that are very, very popular for anyone who's investing in starting a new business, especially those that are tech centered. And I think what we've seen during this, what I call the COVID shuffle, is just we've just expedited what was already happening even before the pandemic. Is companies were realizing that they didn't have to be located in those metropolitan areas or those typical tech or health hubs to do what they're doing. And so they're looking at some of the lifestyles that they can provide their employees. And again, a lot of times that's coming from markets that were not previously being considered when opening up or investing in a new business. So again, whether it's an investor or somebody looking for the second home or somebody looking to relocate to the Americas, it's not just the coastal communities. What's interesting to me is I think, even though I think the NAR data might contradict me a little bit, I think we're actually seeing an increase in that global activity. And I'm expecting we'll see more of that as we go forward, because I think it it is all of the above. And I don't know that it's decreasing in any enormous rate on those coastal areas, but I definitely see it increasing a lot in those other markets that, again, we typically didn't think about.
Okay, great. I want to shift a little bit and talk about buyers who are coming from other countries, maybe to relocate a business or buy a second home. There, during the pandemic, they had to do a lot of that virtually. So talk to me a little bit about what percentage of your global business is done completely virtually, and what new types of technology or old types of technology have you really had to employ and bring across the brand?
We were very fortunate. And the fact of the matter is, as a global brand, we've invested in technology since the very, very beginning. We were some of the first real estate shops in Germany and Europe to have computers on every desk, 20 years ago. That being said, we have a partnership with Google where we have Google Workplace, which includes the Google Meet system, which is a Zoom type system. And we had that already implemented globally before the pandemic. We were already using it for meetings and showings, especially with global clients, even before this happened. So the fact of the matter is, our adoption rates were fine, but adoption shot through the roof, of course, during the pandemic. It was nice that we didn't have to scramble to find a solution. We already had the solution. That being said, we've seen more of an open-mindedness, not only with the global clients, but also our domestic clients, to doing a viewing where we would walk them through with a camera and a narration and show them a property inside, outside, go through an inspection process, doing that same thing with that type of technology. And then, of course, all of the digital aspects of actually closing a transaction have been things that we've used. Again, we've been using them for years. But again, if your client wants to buy and they want to buy now, if they think there's the opportunity and they're not able to be here, then you're going to have to employ these things. And for the most part, they're all working quite well. It's really been more of I think what we've discovered is the consumer's mindset and a lot of our advisors' mindsets were probably more positive and forward thinking than we realized. I think the consumer one is probably the one that was most surprising to us. I think there's been a belief that consumers didn't want to do it this way. And mm-hmm. when they were forced to do it, I think they not only liked it and appreciated it. And that's why I think some of those habits will continue even after the restrictions that require us to do that right now. But yeah, whether it be mobile or remote notarization, whether it be the showings, all the digital aspects of the transaction have been employed on a regular basis. And again, in most cases, I don't have a number to tell you that it's, 20% of our international buyers or 70% of our international buyers. But I would have to make the assumption that it's a very, very high majority just based on the fact that, many cannot and could not travel into the U.S. or Canada over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
But transactions are still taking place.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll talk about remote notarization in a little bit. I first want to, find out from you, what have you seen in as far as creative ways that brokers are really helping their agents reach global buyers and investors? Or what strategies would you recommend to brokers who are trying to reach that market and help their agents reach those markets?
This is going to seem like the most obvious, but for some reason in this business, we don't always go to the obvious first. We look for the more complicated answer. I would start in your market is knowing who is coming to your market. And where are people who are leaving your market going to? I think NAR has some great research for a lot of markets to tell you exactly what that looks like. But the next place I would go is to your local airport and find out where are the flights going to and where are they coming from, especially those nonstop flights. With that, you need to know the market that your clients are coming from. And in most cases, you can narrow it down to maybe four or five different markets. And what a great opportunity to schedule your next trip or your next vacation to that market and go there and get to know someone. If you're fortunate enough to be with Engel and Volkers and have an Engel and Volkers shop on the other end, I highly recommend that you go into your brand's location in that area and get to know the people in that shop, ask them questions, give them answers about how our market works, because that knowledge is going to give you the confidence when you know what people are used to in doing a real estate transaction in that market. You know how to better serve them in this market. This is a referral business. That collaboration overseas or over state lines or country lines is extremely important. But I would go with the very obvious. Know where there is, go there, get to know there, make contacts there, and then start referring business back and forth and then specialize. Because usually when there's one, there's 10. And when there's 10, there's 100.
Yeah, and I've heard of some brokers who are, paying for their agents who want to work with global buyers and investors to go through like the CIPS, the Certified International Property Specialist course. Are there any other groups or courses or anything that you suggest mainly for brokers or ideas that brokers can have a special program for their agents to do those things?
I would think at Annual Evokers, we have a variety of programs that we built specifically for our network. But I do believe the CIPS program is first class. It's one that we recommend all of our private office advisors. That's our highest echelon working with uber wealthy clients. We require that all of them complete the CIPS training because we think it's just such an impressive training program. But from there, I would look to your brands. I believe most of the brands that call themselves global, you know, have some sort of an infrastructure in place to help do. Again, I believe the old concept of like an exchange student, but finding that relationship on the other end, someone that you can speak to openly and honestly and ask, questions that may seem silly in the beginning. That's really the best way to go. I think CIPS is a good idea to give you an understanding of culture and how business is conducted. But from there, it really is immersing yourself in that culture and understanding how things operate. I don't think there's any magic pills there.
Yeah.
I do believe that. I think that with the book.
Kiss, bow, and shake hands.
Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I just completely went blank on that one. But I do think that's a very good starting place for most people who are looking at after you know where that there is, read the right books about those different cultures. Because what I have found is it's usually there's nothing nefarious, but things do go wrong. And usually where it goes wrong is a miscommunication or worse yet, it's usually based on an assumption that business is conducted the same there as it is here. And that's not always the case. Why we all, as Christian Volker says, we all cook with water. There is a buyer, there is a seller, there is a transaction. From there, things do get a little bit different, a little bit nuanced. And if you know those nuances, you're going to increase your client's confidence when you can say, I know where you're from, they do it this way. However, in this market, this is how we do it. And you can manage those expectations and create confidence in that relationship. So that would be one of my first pieces is the series of the CIPS. Look to your brand for those resources. Travel to those locations if you can, or at least get to know, find a pen pal, a digital pen pal in today's world, to get to know and really understand the market.
Okay, great. I wanted to go back to remote notarization. So I interviewed an attorney who specializes in international transactions about a month ago. And I really thought, okay, well, I know there are issues with remote notarization, but I thought it would be perfect for global transactions. But what I'm finding is that it is not, because you have to have a federal ID from the United States in order to close it remotely. Otherwise, you have to be there in person. So what are you using? How are you handling this? Are you doing any closings remotely, or are you generally, doing it in person?
When possible, obviously in person is still the best solution and still the easiest solution. Remote notaries, it really depends on the country that you're coming from. Rules are always going to be different. There are differences in all cases. And in some cases, it can work quite well. In some cases, if you don't have a U.S. ID, you're able to use a U.S. citizen as a witness. And confirm with an international passport. But again, in every place, there's differences. And it certainly has created some frustration on one side. And I think it will get better because we've learned a lot over the last 12 months in a forced situation. But at the same point, I think we've also realized it can be done. And if you've got a client that wants to make it happen, and if you have an advisor, an agent, who is has the right context, perhaps the attorney you're speaking of, you know, things you can make it happen. But yeah, there are a lot of challenges wrapped around the idea. It's not as simple as we think of with the the DocuSign or the digital signatures that we use all the time that are very, very simple and also very everybody's becoming very familiar with. Everyone accepts it as a legal signature for the most part. That's not the case with the remote notaries at this point in time.
Yeah, and I've heard that some of the service providers, each one of them accepts different types as well. So while some of them might be able to let you have a citizen who can witness, others will not. So it's a matter of finding the right service provider as well.
It's kind of that chicken and egg. If you have to have a federal ID, and you either need to be here or go to a local embassy there, you find yourself in those types of transactions definitely working with local embassies a lot and trying to find out what the right solution is. And what we find, especially with some countries, is just because you made it work this time with that provider in that place doesn't mean it's going to work exactly the same way next time with the same provider in the same country. And that is where there is there's certainly a lot that can be done to improve that process. But we've seen that with digital signatures. I remember when I first started using digital signatures, 10, 15 years ago, certain states were still not allowing it. Certain brands were not allowing it on the purchase contracts. So, I mean, we went through that same step. And as it became more obvious that is how people wanted to conduct business, it became better. And I would hope over time we might see that. But again, it's still going to vary based on the country.
Yeah.
Some countries are still way, way, way behind in how these processes work. And it's not on their highest priority list of helping people buy and sell properties elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about geographic trends, in the United States, where they're possibly coming to that's different from the coasts. But I wanted to talk to you about other types of trends with global investors coming into the United States, as far as what, are there things happening in certain countries that we're finding you're getting an influx of buyers from that country? Are there emerging countries where buyers are coming to the United States more frequently than they used to? What about China? What is going on with Chinese investment? So talk to me a little bit about that.
We've certainly, for years, there's been an influx of buyers coming in from China. Especially frankly into Canada. We've seen a lot more impact in Canada. Now, Canada has implemented a foreign buyers tax, which has changed that a little bit. Really what it did is it pulled a lot of the buyers that were moving to the West Coast to BC and pushed them to the East Coast to Quebec because those rules have not been uniform across the country of Canada. That is changing. We're seeing some trends based around that. In the U.S., I think it's, again, the pandemic really hasn't changed, which has been interesting over the last couple of years because of a lot of the unrest and the publicity of the unrest in the United States, socially, politically. We've definitely seen some of the confidence in whether or not the U.S. is as safe to own, whether economically or just your personal safety, depending on where you're coming from. Has had an impact. And I think that's where the NAR report was talking about some of the trends maybe decreasing on some international buyers who have looked at this as being a safe haven for many reasons, not just financially. So the fact is that I don't think we're seeing a real shift in where people are coming from. They're still coming from South America. They're still coming from Asia. And a lot of times they are looking for a safe haven to further investments or a place to get away to in some fashion. And I don't think that trend is going to slow down much more than it probably did over the last few years. As a matter of fact, I think based on some of the latest reports I've seen, confidence is actually increasing once again in the U.S. as being a destination that people want to own. And Canada, of course, has remained solid the whole time.
Yeah. Now, what about what can you do as a broker to kind of get the message across that, yeah, you're hearing a lot of this news and you're reading social media, but here are the facts about what's going on in my area. What are some suggestions you have for that?
Know the facts first. And I think this is where we have some challenges. Facts is a word that we've kind of lost touch with over the last couple of years. So if you are a broker, if you are an agent, first make sure you do know the real facts. Check your own sources. Get multiple sources. All of the things that a journalist, we always talk, you know, journalism from high school. You know, do the things that you should do to make sure you know your facts. Because real estate is a local business. And even though there might be some national facts, the reality is that very rarely is the national, the story exactly in your area. So know the facts first and then promote, dilute the negative, dilute the non-factual information or the sensational information with facts. And you do that. Obviously, social media is a very popular source for information. But you know, the old fashioned market report is still probably one of the best tools that any broker or can provide for their advisors or any advisor can provide for their clients. And take the time to create a really good market report. Show the data, show the trends. And then while the data might be out there in a lot of different forms, even companies like Real Trends provides a lot of great data. But now what the consumer wants is you to add your local interpretation of that data. What's your expertise show you that that data means in your area? And so know it first. Double check it and then communicate it. If you're a broker, communicate it with your market, communicate it with your advisors. If you're an advisor, communicate it with the public. Use all the mediums that you have available to you to get the facts out there and dilute the non-facts or the questionable facts or just the sensational facts, which may be that something bad happened someplace. There's a lot of good things that are happening in a lot of these markets. There's a reason why people are buying in these markets. Make sure you know what they are so you can tell to other people who are trying to consider whether they want to be in your market or another market.
Yeah, because I see a lot of lifestyle, especially living here in Florida, like, oh, come for the beaches. But it doesn't really provide a snapshot of what is happening in your area to entice them to come other than, hey, we've got great beaches.
Right.
So, yeah.
And there's more to Florida than great beaches. And there's also more to Florida than a lot of times what we would see in the media. People right. make assumptions. I mean, one thing I think we all noticed from this election, and I don't want to go political here, is this is a purple country. This is not a red country or a blue country. And it's and Florida is not a red state or a blue state or any others for that matter. And sometimes we pick up on that sensational piece. And so everybody makes the assumption that a market is one thing or another. And it's not usually that. And there's pockets in every place that, you know, lean. So make sure you know your own facts and that you don't push someone else's facts or someone else's agenda, which a lot of times is to get eyeballs. Yours is to get buyers in homes and sellers homes sold and make sure that you know those facts and that you can articulate those facts to people who want to know.
Great. Well, is there anything, those were all the questions I had, but was there anything we didn't talk about that you think is really important for other brokers and broker owners and team leaders to know about the global market?
I'll just tell you one thing that I found interesting, and I'm not sure really how this translates out to your listeners yet. But typically, I can look at the Americas and I can see pockets of something happening. This is happening on the East Coast, this is the West Coast, this in Canada, this in Mexico. This is happening in France or Italy or whatever the case would be. Rarely is everyone in a very, very, very similar situation where there's low inventory across the market. There's high demand across the globe. There's high demand across the globe. You know, this is a very unique time, I think, in real estate. And I think we're going to see a lot of things come out of that. This COVID shuffle, as I call it, where a lot of people have moved from the metros, maybe temporarily, and increased their vacation home or their out of the city home. I think that's a trend that's probably not going to end with the pandemic ending. I also believe that cities should not be counted out. I think New York City, San Francisco's, Paris's of the world are going to come back probably bigger and better, maybe different, over the years. And so I think it's something that's very interesting. I think there's a lot of people who care about it. And I think if you're in this business as a broker, as an agent, or as anyone else who's providing service, You need to be looking at all of that yourself, listening to podcasts like this one, and learning so you can articulate all of this information, because I do think what we know is our clients are going to be wanting even more from us. They're going to be demanding us to have the intelligence that comes with hard work, in all honesty.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for all of your insight. It was really interesting. I learned some new things about the global market as well. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to RealTrends.
Thanks for inviting me. We'll do it again soon, I hope.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks.
Now more than ever, the housing industry is looking to its leaders for answers. That's why each week, the Housing News Podcast invites a new mortgage, fintech, or real estate executive to the show to provide its listeners with more perspective on the announcements and news stories crossing HousingWire's news desk. Hosted by Sarah Wheeler and produced by Alcina Lloyd, the Housing News Podcast is now available on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and more.
Thanks for listening to HousingWire Daily. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode, and we'll catch everyone back here again tomorrow.